Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com, 17-27-1-3. Our Evansville Iceman not looking very good this season.
No, it's getting pretty close to not mathematically eliminated, but realistically eliminated from the playoffs. We're now officially two-thirds of the way through the season, 48 games through the 72-game season, and the Icemen are still in last place and at least 12 points out of the playoffs. And it's going to take a minor miracle, I think, to get this team back in the playoffs. They're not mathematically eliminated, and they probably won't be until at least March, but it's going to take a heck of a lot of wins and a heck of a lot of help in front of us from teams losing more than they are right now.
It's kind of like this season has beaten us down, like the Cincinnati Cyclones beat down Nathan Moon 4 seconds into Friday night's game.
Yeah, that was wild. I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like that before. I mean, you see fights off the draw a lot, but usually it's two willing combatants. And Andrew Conboy, presumably with the approval of Coach Jared Scaldi,
which we've kind of talked about 2 and 3 weeks ago. Both you and Patafi has talked a little bit about
that Scaldi's a whack job, and you know, players will fight off the draw and players hold grudges, and but I gotta think that as much of a goon as he may be, I don't think that Conboy would do something like that where you're automatically risking suspension without the prior approval of his coach. So as much as we want to direct our ire toward Conboy for jumping Moon right off the draw behind the referee's back, I think a lot of the blame needs to be pointed at the coach as well, because, that's not something a player just goes off and does on his own without any sort of discussion with the coach. If he did do it without any discussion with the coach, then he doesn't deserve a roster spot anymore. But if he gets to keep one anywhere, it's probably going to be in Cincinnati with his nut job of a bench boss that they have there. But that was a wild start to a game, and it certainly got the crowd intrigued by the way things were going to go. And really, Conboy got off sort of lucky, because he could have gotten a lot more than he got. They only gave him 5 for fighting in a game misconduct for being the aggressor, because he kept throwing punches once Moon was down and clearly not fighting back. But I don't know how. I know the referee had his back turned because he was dropping the puck, but how do the linesmen not consult with him and say, yeah, this guy instigated this, he's got to get a minor for instigating too? Because clearly Moon was not interested in fighting, and he didn't know it was coming. So that's the very definition of the instigator rule, and I don't know how he didn't get 2 for instigating as well on top of what he got. We started the game essentially with a 5-minute power play, but it should have been 7.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at it. But part, one of those things, I want to take a look at the rule book. But the 5 for fighting when a guy doesn't fight is a 5-minute major. And you gave him a game misconduct. So I don't know.
If you tack on the extra 2.
Yeah, because the instigator, it may be that the instigator only works when 2 guys fight and someone started the fight. But because Moon wasn't a willing combatant, you can't give him an instigator on top of it because it wasn't 2 fighters. So that's one of those rule book things.
Perhaps. But I still think if that's how it is in the rule book, then I'm not a fan of that rule, because I think if you instigate a fight, whether the guy fights back or not, you're still the instigator.
Yep.
So one way or the other, it should still be an extra minor, even if you get the 5 on top of it.
It may come down to the rule definition of what's a fight.
True.
And if you have one person who doesn't fight and you don't give that 5-minute major to both players, it's not technically a fight.
That's true.
So then all you're left with is either a game misconduct or a match penalty for intent to injure.
Right.
And so,
which it could have been that.
Right. And you could have gone that way as well. But 5-minute major for the Iceman, 5-minute power play, unending power play.
Yeah.
And then a game misconduct for the guy. So yeah. I can understand where that's one of those rule things. So often, referees at every level in every sport get blamed for things, but they are just enforcing the rules as it's presented to them.
Right.
And a lot of it just ends up being the way the rules are written.
Yeah, even if we don't like the way the rules yep. are, they're not the legislators, they're the cops. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's one of those things where even though Convoy perhaps should have gotten a lot more than he got, maybe that's all he could have gotten according to the rule book. Yep. So it'll be interesting to see if the league issues any additional punishment. He got an automatic one-game suspension for Saturday's game because it was his third aggressor game misconduct of the season. But so far, as of when we record this, he hasn't gotten any additional suspension. So maybe it's end of story. Maybe they're still reviewing it and he'll get more. We'll see. But it certainly started the game off on an interesting note and kind of set the tone for the way that game continued. In the first period, Mark Cody also got into a fight, and then at the end of the first period, Matt Krug, new guy to the Icemen, got in a fight at 20 minutes in the first period.
Ah, I love it.
So for those keeping score at home, the first period featured 4 total goals and 3 fights. It was a wild one. They did settle down in the second and third period, though. There were only 8 minor penalties that in the second and third. There was another skirmish at the end of overtime. Kind of 4 guys kind of tussled a little bit. And the referee gave each guy 4 for roughing and a 10-minute misconduct. And somebody asked me why a 10-minute misconduct and not a game misconduct. And that's ultimately up to the referee. He probably could have given them game misconducts, but I think at that point, the 10-minute misconduct was sufficient for saying, no, you shouldn't be fighting at the end of overtime. And also, it doubled by making them ineligible for the shootout. Because in the ECHL, if you have a minor or major penalty that's not expired at the end of overtime, you're eligible for the shootout. But if you have a misconduct, you're not.
Ah, I like that rule.
Yeah,
that's a good
so that
rule.
Was a, I thought he called that well. That was a smart way to handle that situation of make sure you're not going to get away scot-free by fighting at the end of overtime, but you're not throwing the book at guys and creating extra paperwork for yourself to fill out either. So it was a very, very interesting game continuing this rivalry with the Cyclones. And 34 total penalties for 123 total penalty minutes in the game.
I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
It was a really fun game to watch. And if you want to see some more fisticuffs between the Icemen and Cyclones, there's only one more time they come to town this season. That's Sunday, March 3rd at 7:15. That is a late start for Sundays. There's a UE game during the day, so that's why that's not a 5 o'clock start. But Sunday, March 3rd, the only other time the Cyclones come to town this year. There are some road games left, including the last Friday and Saturday of the regular season are in Cincinnati, and I know there's a bunch of people that are going over for those games. So those could get really interesting. Yep. If the Cyclones have a playoff spot locked up and we don't have anything to play for, boy, those could get really nasty. We'll see. But, yeah, Friday's game, it was a really good game overall. The Icemen kept fighting back. They scored first during that 5-minute power play, but then almost immediately after it ended, Cincinnati tied it, and then they went ahead. And the Icemen came back from being down 2-1, 3-2, and 4-3 to force overtime. And then after the scoreless overtime, we had the first ever shootout at the Ford Center.
Yep, talked about it a couple of months ago, yeah, and finally we get to see one.
The 50th regular season home game at the Ford Center, and we finally got our first shootout. Dylan Clark had the only goal for either team in the shootout.
Paul Dayton, the goalie stole the show.
Yeah, and I was pleasantly surprised because Paul Dayton did not look particularly sharp during regulation and overtime. He made 23 saves on 27 shots, but he just didn't necessarily pass the eyeball test. He was kind of giving up some weak rebounds that didn't look really toned in, but he tuned it up for the shootout and was on, including one of the Cyclone shooters made a really nice move, a double move, and he stuck with him all the way. So Dayton stopped all 5 Cyclone shooters. Dylan Clark scored the only goal in the shootout, and the Icemen prevailed 5-4. So it was a very dramatic game. My star of the game, though, was Daniel Tatro. It was one of those games where the best player perhaps on the ice didn't necessarily show up the most on the stat sheet. He only had 1 assist. He did have 7 shots, but he was all over the place. He was physical. He was pinching in on offense. He was solid defensively. Just one of those games where Tatro played a great game from start to finish the entire length of the ice. And I talked to the official scorers toward the end of that game and said, if you've got an open spot, I think Tatro is deserving of being one of the 3 stars. And And they did. They gave him the third star of the game. And I like it when you have a guy like that that doesn't necessarily stack up statistically with some of the other players in the same game. But if he plays really well and is clearly a difference maker, then we've talked about the three stars before. Yep. I think it's certainly worth inclusion.
Now, that was also the first night of Matt Krug, and you really liked what you saw.
Yeah, I liked what he brought. He's responsible defensively. You wouldn't necessarily think so because he was a minus three on Friday and a minus two on Saturday, and you'd maybe look at that and say this guy's going to be a liability. But just by watching him play, he plays a lot like Tatro, and he's aggressive offensively but not reckless, and he plays physical. He had a fight in both games over the weekend. I really like what I see out of him. He also has a cannon of a shot. So perhaps we may have found another option as far as being a quarterback on the power play, because he's got a heck of a shot. And there was one on Friday when he wound one up on the point on the power play, and it was wide, and it hit the glass so hard the people that were sitting behind the glass thought it was going to shatter.
Nice.
So, yeah, I liked what I saw out of him. The plus-minus was a little bit deceptive because I guess that's proof in the pudding of what we've talked about with Todd Robinson, that sometimes plus minus isn't necessarily indicative of the whole story. But yeah, Krug, I really like, and it is Krug.
Krug.
Yeah. So something interesting about that game, kind of a statistical oddity about Friday's game. The Iceman are a last place team. They only have 17 wins, which I think is the second fewest in the league, behind or only ahead of Bakersfield. But even though we're a last-place team, the Icemen have now won the first game of the calendar month 4 months in a row. Every month except October. But November, December, January, and now February, they've started the months with a victory. So kind of an oddball thing. You wish they could sustain that throughout each month. But
well, and we have seen them. You've gone over the stats of every month they've gotten better until the end of last month, where for the first time in the last couple, we were under 500 for the month. And so, but it is an up and coming team. There is no doubt, but there will definitely be changes in the off season to get a little bit more talent in here.
Yeah. One other thing I did want to mention about Friday's game. I don't know if very many people noticed this, but if you were looking at the scoreboard during the shootout, the clock was running. And the reason why, I talked to Steve Halber, the reason why the clock was running during the shootout is you have to have the clock running in order for the goal lights to work during the shootout. So he set the clock at 15 minutes and just ran it during the shootout, and then he stopped it when the shootout ended. So it was this odd thing that we had a shootout, which is technically untimed, but at the end of the shootout, we saw 11:42 on the clock because it took apparently 3 minutes and 18 seconds to conduct the entire shootout.
To do 9 shooters.
Yeah. So, if we have another shootout at the Ford Center this season, watch the clock, and you'll probably be seeing it running, because if it's not running, they won't be able to turn on the goal lights when someone scores in the shootout.
Saturday night, we lose 3-1 to Elmira and a very hot goaltender.
Yeah, definitely. It's another case of playing well in general and just not being able to tickle the twine enough. And that's kind of been the story a lot this season. There's a lot of teams that have had goalies that have been making differences, and their goalies have made a difference more often than our goalies have, and that's one of the reasons we're in last place. But that's not to say that our goalie wasn't up to the task on Saturday. Paul Karpovich played really well. He made 32 saves on 34 shots, and unofficially should have had an assist on our only goal because it was a power play created by a goalie interference call that, shall we say, was slightly embellished.
And the Academy Award goes to
Paul Karpovich. Yes. He barely got touched and yet acted like he got hit by a truck and earned us our power play, which led to our only goal of the night. So kudos to him for that. He played well, but Elmira was just one step better. The Icemen did take a 1-0 lead in that game as well, and then Elmira scored twice later in the second period and then added an empty netter late. It was the second straight night where there was fights right off the bat, basically. Tatro had a fight in the first minute, and then like 14 seconds later, Krug got into another fight. So things kind of settled down after that, though. Interestingly, Krug, his fight in the Saturday game was against a rookie named Brandon Blandina, and Blandina was busted open in that fight. He had to go to the locker room for repairs, but he ended up coming back. But his blood ended up being on Krug's jersey, and it was a jersey auction night. So We'll get to the jersey auction in a little bit, but that added a little bit of extra flavor to Krug's jersey because he had some of another player's blood on his jersey. But I thought it was interesting, too. I always look, when we have fights, I look to see, you know, is it an overmatch or an undermatch based on, is the guy that our guy is fighting a regular fighter? Does he get a lot of penalty minutes or not? Blandina actually had no penalty minutes. He's a rookie, and that was his first penalty of any kind this season in his 20th professional game. So start off with a bang. Your first ever pro penalty is a fight, and you get busted open in the process. But
there goes the Lady Bing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So, yeah, it was an interesting game on Saturday. It wasn't quite as entertaining, I would say, as Friday's game, but it was still a good game. The worst part about Saturday's game was one of the sponsors, and I don't know who, gave out 1,000 mini horns, and they were basically like miniature vuvuzelas. And that is seriously the most annoying thing on the planet. I don't know who came up with the idea of vuvuzelas, and I blame it on the World Cup of Soccer from a few years ago when they kind of sprung to the forefront of society, and now everybody thinks they're cool, and man, they're awful. There was not 20 seconds of silence the entire night Saturday because people just kept blowing them at random times. It didn't matter what was going on. They'd just be sitting there blowing them. Man, it was awful. But it was a good crowd, 7,455 on Saturday. It was our fifth straight game with over 5,000 fans, and our average over the past four games is now over 7,000. So very cool. On the season, the average is 52-12, which is eighth in the league and up about 300 from last season. So when you consider ticket prices went up in some cases and you're not a winning team versus being last year, and plus just the general newness of last year being the inaugural season in the Ford Center has worn off, and yet the attendance has still gone up. That's very good to see.
Yeah, definitely. And it's nice to go to that arena. I love it when the upper bowl's open.
Mm-hmm.
It just adds so much more sound, so much more feeling. I understand putting the curtain over, but when we've got the people there, 7,000, 6,500, 7,500 in that building, it makes for a fun environment and a fun night.
Yeah, even when it's not that full in the upper bowl, having the curtains up, it makes it seem like it's a little bit bigger of a deal. And it definitely does add to the atmosphere a little bit. Out of Saturday's game, probably the biggest topic of discussion on the Asylum, at least on Facebook, was the general concept of pulling the goalie when you're down a goal or two late in the game. Most people seem to understand that it's kind of accepted practice, and you just do it because that's what everybody does.
You know who doesn't understand that? Goalies. Goalies will not leave the net.
They don't want to.
They are all weirdos. And you say, dude, we're going to lose this game if we don't score a goal. And
they don't want to relinquish their spot.
Yeah, they want to fight and battle and everything else. It's just that competitive nature. And you just have to say, dude, you did it for 58 minutes and 30 seconds, but we got to try and tie this game up.
Right.
Thank you for your work, but we've got to score.
Right. And that's, I think, most people seem to grasp that that's just the case. It's what you have to do. You pull out all the stops at the end in an effort to try to score. And if you get scored on, oh, well, you lose by two instead of one. What difference does it make? But Aaron Miller, among others, but primarily Aaron Miller on the Asylum, was talking about how we shouldn't pull the goalie because we're so bad at puck possession. And my argument is, well, if we were better at puck possession, we wouldn't be down in the first place.
We wouldn't have to pull the goalie.
teams that are really good at puck possession generally aren't trailing at the end of the game. But I thought I'd open it up for you to just your general thoughts on pulling the goalie and whether or not it's the right thing to do, even if your team is not good at puck possession.
Yeah, obviously it's the right thing to do. The debate that's always worth having is, I remember Scotty Bowman with the Red Wings when they won all those Stanley Cups, 98, 2002. But he was a guy that would pull his goalie in the last 30 to 45 seconds. Other coaches, even down by one goal, as soon as you get that offensive zone face-off, they're pulling their goalie at a minute 56, a minute 38. So I think that's the more worthy of the discussion is, do you want to give your players as much time as possible with that sixth skater? Of course, that opens up your net longer.
Right.
Or are you just going to wait for that last 30 seconds, last 28 seconds, and then go go balls to the wall, all out, trying to get that. So, and sometimes the worst thing is when you want to pull your goalie and you can't get control of the puck, or you can't get it deep and you can't get that goalie out. That becomes, and then the goalie's doing the skating halfway to the bench, turn around, skating back, madness. That gets frustrating.
Turning double
too.
Axles in the defensive zone.
What Scotty Bowman did with the Red Wings years ago was amazing. Every time I saw it, I mean, they'd be down 3-2, and there would just be just utter confidence. A minute 15 on the clock, utter confidence. 1 minute, you know. Wait, Tommy Mason, what time is it? 1 minute on the clock, still no goalie pulled. And then at like 38-second mark, you'd see who was the Chris Osgood come to the bench, or Dominic Hasek come to the
bench.
Mike
Vernon.
And that's,
That was going back a little farther.
He was one of my favorites. Don't get me on the Mike Vernon saga there. But anyways, so I'm a guy, I like to pull early. I like to pull as soon as we get that offensive zone face-off, minute 45 on the clock, it's time to pull the goalie. It's time to gain control of the puck and try to score.
Yeah, that's generally the window you'll see it, as long as possession allows it. It's usually between 1 minute and about a minute 45. You don't often see guys pull the goalie sooner than that, or any more later than that, unless
Crom
the possession of the puck dictates.
You will see Crom do it, and other NHL coaches, if they're down by two.
Yeah,
and they start looking at that 2:30 mark, and they'll just pull the goalie just to say, hey, can we just get something, get bingo.
And
here,
really, when you're down by two, it's like, well, the only way we're going to score twice is if we pull out all the stops, because there's really no difference between losing by two and losing by three. The difference between losing by one and losing by two, at least you think, well, maybe there was a chance that we would have scored one without pulling the goalie. But you're generally, especially if you've only scored one in 58 minutes, you're generally not going to score two in the last 2 minutes unless you do something crazy. So, yeah, it's interesting, though, when you do see somebody that deviates. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago at Swander, there was that game when we were playing Quad City when they pulled the goalie with like 7.5 minutes to go, and they put him back in a couple times here and there, but they pulled him 3 or 4 times in the last half of the third period. And I don't know that it ended up – I think they scored once, but then we ended up scoring an empty netter and it ended up being a wash. But that was unusual, because usually if you pull your goalie that soon, you're going to get burned, because the net is just empty so long that you're going to end up giving up an empty netter or two or three.
I think part of that – I believe that was a Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening game, and I think Quad City had been 3-on-3, and the coaching staff just wanted to give their players something to think about. They couldn't – they were so tired that they couldn't motivate them anymore, so you pull your goalie down 4-1 with 7.5 minutes to make them think, oh – I've got to be defensively responsible. There's no one's in the net back there. And you just kind of change it, because you're just trying to motivate. We are not captains of ships with galley slaves, and you can just keep whipping people and whipping people. Humanity doesn't really work like that, other than in that situation. But hockey players, you got to tweak little things to get synapses firing in the brain to try and get something going. And they were already losing 4-1 in that one.
Yeah, so what do you have to
lose?
It's
an interesting coaching move, definitely.
Yep. I think that's all we've got on Friday and Saturday, our recap. It's nice when we only have two games to recap.
Yes. So we've got the supercomputer calculating in the basement of Michael and Amanda Shockley's house. And so more money spent.
Where we keep Benigni when he's all tied up.
More money spent on the supercomputer than on Evan. And it is calculating.
That is impossible.
Man games lost to injury in this horrendous 2012-2013 Evansville Iceman year. Poor Brian Patafi. I just think about him every time.
Should be the highest paid guy in this organization.
He should have signed a contract that he got like $10 for every man game lost to injury as a bonus.
Yeah, there you go. 48 games into the season, we are up to 281 man games lost. On the transaction front, last Wednesday, there were no transactions, but on the amusement park here on WYIR, Brian Patafi revealed yet another injury. Patrick Kennedy is now out with a concussion. He actually sustained it on Saturday the 26th against Fort Wayne, but kept playing and played through it on Sunday the 27th, and then reported symptoms from it, and it's now been diagnosed as a concussion. He did not play this past weekend. Thursday.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that guy.
He's fun to watch. And he's very versatile, too, playing both ends of the ice. So,
I know concussions are serious, and I don't want any kids going crazy out there, but you want to see a guy try to fight through it.
Yeah.
He tried to fight through it. He realized he was wrong. He mentioned it to Patafi on the bus ride.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they wouldn't have I don't know. There wasn't really anything they could do on Sunday anyways if they had known Saturday night. But right. He tried to fight through it, and kudos to him.
Yeah. Thursday, the 31st, we did get some reinforcements back from Peoria, thankfully. Anthony Nigro and Stefan Della Rovere were both sent down.
Della Rovere.
Yeah. Boy, he came out like a house of fire on Friday. He was when Moon got jumped on Friday, Della Rovere looked like a rabid dog trying to get to Convoy. They actually played on a line together. Nigro and Della Rovere played with Moon this weekend. So, and that line's fun to watch. That's a lot of skill on that line. Friday on February 1st, Phil Plante came off the IR after missing a ton of games with his back issues.
That's awesome. And back surgery.
Yeah. He came off the IR, and because he's a veteran, that put us back at 5. So Jim McKenzie had to go to reserve in order to stay under the veteran limit. Also on Friday, Trent Vogelhuber was moved from reserve to the active roster. That was not because he's healthy. It was just because somebody had to come off of reserve to make room for McKenzie. So Vogelhuber is back on the active roster, but still not playing. He didn't play any of the games over the weekend. I thought Phil looked okay. He was slow, but that's who he is. He's slow. But he didn't look rusty. He was on the ice for 2 of our goals scored and also 2 of our goals allowed. But I never really noticed him in a bad way. So, and really, in your first game back from a long-term injury, that's really all you can ask for. So he looked all right, and hopefully he'll be good to go going forward. He did not play on Saturday. They put him back on reserve. The plan all along was just to play him one of the 2 games to kind of ease him back into it. So he went back to reserve on Saturday, and Jim McKenzie went back onto the active roster for Saturday's game. In Saturday's game, Tyler Miller suffered a hip injury. His status right now is unknown, but he did not play the 2nd or 3rd periods. So if he's going to be out for any length of time, hopefully Plante is ready to go full time.
How does this even happen?
It's just,
how do you acquire someone brand new to the team and they get injured in the 1st or 2nd game? And we've seen it multiple times this year.
Maybe it's Patafi's fault. Maybe he's not the savior. Maybe there's something he's doing that's screwing the players over.
Maybe he's not making the Gatorade right.
Interesting.
We will have an
Iceman Insights investigation.
Yeah. Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
That'll be a special show. Oh, we had to bring up our thoughts for our special show.
Yeah.
Little reminder there as we record.
Continuing on with our transaction cavalcade on Sunday, this is part of the problem of having the NHL back, as it means there are more potential injuries that can affect your own roster. In St. Louis, well, actually in Detroit, on Friday night, Yaroslav Halak, the starting goaltender for the Blues, sustained a groin injury Friday. Sunday, they put him on 7-day IR. As a result, they called up Jake Allen from Peoria. He's been the starter in Peoria. And as a result of that, then they called Karpowicz up to Peoria. Now, the good thing is Halak is only expected to miss 2 games, which is last night, Tuesday, and then tomorrow night, Thursday. And he's generally expected to return to practice on Friday and probably be able to at least suit up, maybe not start, but at least be dressed on Saturday for their next game. So, in theory, if all goes according to plan, Karpowicz will be back before our home game next Wednesday. But he will not be here probably for this entire 3-game road trip this week, which means Dayton will likely start all 3 games. And as of when we record this, we don't know who the backup's going to be.
I thought you posted it. Was it Francois Pilon?
Denis Pilon.
Denis Pilon.
Yes.
Just beat out Chris Lemon.
Yes. but, yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But regardless of who the backup is, it's going to be Dayton in net for all 3 games in all likelihood, unless something crazy happens and he gets hurt. So we'll see what happens, but as of right now, when we record this, that's all of our transactions. So, again, I'll let you do the plug. You did
like
it so
anytime,
well last week.
24/7. If you want information that has to do anything with your Evansville Iceman, there's only one place in the tri-state you can go to. Only one. IcemanManiacs.com. There's a red graphic. It's got a handicap symbol on it. click on that. Go to the end of that forum page, and you will see the updated roster, including captains, whose rights owned by whom, etc., etc. Again, all the information, any information you could possibly need on your Iceman, go to IcemanManiacs.com.
Excellent. Well done, sir.
Hey, that's what I get paid the big bucks for. Anyways, now into our best segment. Because we do the least amount of talking, here comes Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
All right, this is, I believe, our first Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week that has a distinct local flavor. This is a pretty cool story. It's kind of long, but it's a cool story. So there's a guy named Jason Lee McKinney. He grew up on the west side of Evansville, right down the street from Brad Perkins, believe it or not.
He was also a part of Youth Incorporated Youth Ministries for many years.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
Oh.
That's why I told you I knew Jason Lee McKinney.
Uh-huh. So he was Brad Perkins' best friend in high school. After high school, he ended up moving to Nashville, I presume to get far, far away from Perkins. And he fronted a Christian rock band called Lost Anthem. Interestingly, in 2005, Lost Anthem filmed a music video for their song called Dividing CDs right here in Evansville, including right here where we sit right now at the Wired Coffee House.
My wife and I were extras in the crowd screaming.
Really?
And yes. And part of it was also filmed at the old Harpools before it burned down.
Oh, very cool.
Yep. That's...
So, yeah, and that video is on YouTube if anybody wants to look at that. Lost Anthem Dividing CDs is the name of the song. You'll have to look and see if you can find Bonini.
I don't think I made the cut.
Oh, you ended up on the cutting room floor right where you belong?
Exactly. That's why I got a face for radio.
So, since then, Lost Anthem is no more, but Jason is now fronting the aptly named Jason Lee McKinney Band. It's kind of a country rock with a hint of blues. And this Friday, the 8th at 9 o'clock, they are having a concert and launch party for their newest album over at Mojo's Boneyard on Bellmead on the east side. Also, next month, they'll be playing the Backstage Bar and Grill on Main Street, which is downtown there right between Main Gate and the Iceman office. And that'll be Saturday, March 30th at 9 o'clock. So a couple Evansville appearances coming up for the Jason Lee McKinney Band. He's also featured in this month's News for You, and you can get all their tour information and all that stuff, other concert dates, at jasonleemckinneyband.com. One of these songs from the new album, which is dropping soon, was played at both of this past weekend's Iceman games at the urging of Mr. Perkins. And it's a good song. I really like it. And I think because it's a good song and a local guy and tied in here to the Wired Coffee House, it deserves some love on the radio, too. So I do believe this is the Evansville radio premiere of this song. This is the Jason Lee McKinney Band, Rattle That Cage.
Out of that cage. I refuse to sing the blues. Tell me of the coming news. I'm gonna yell and I'm gonna
We are back here on Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. They call him the Shocker. They call me the Dirty D. Here we are talking Iceman hockey.
Lots and lots of Iceman hockey. The longest one-hour radio show
in the history of hockey.
Starting our next segment with the jersey auction that we had this past weekend after Saturday's game. It was Hart Night, and they had special one-time-only jerseys. And then afterwards, they were all autographed and auctioned off. And this auction was the best yet. The auction totaled a whopping $20,375, which is an average of almost $784 per jersey.
I want to have jobs like all of you people have jobs.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because I want a jersey for $200, and that's really pushing it.
Yeah, that was the best total and the best average of the three auctions this season. Combined now, the three auctions have fetched over $50,000, which is cool but insane at the same time. the top eight this time, the top moneymaker was Nathan Moon at $1,700, which is the highest total for a single jersey this season.
Love it.
Mark Cody was second at $1,450, followed by Aaron Jens at $1,025.
I think that just puts it right there that Aaron Jens is indeed better,
Than Matt, yeah.
He's better looking than Matt.
Yeah, that's two out of three jersey auctions. He's bested his brother this year. Dan Tatro and Paul Karpowicz were tied for fourth at $1,000 each. Other notables, Matt Jens was at $950, Dayton was at $900, Jason Dale at $800, which I think is up a little bit for him. That's cool. Anthony Onagro and Josh Beaulieu were $775
each.
Little
surprising about Josh Beaulieu.
Yeah, that's down
20 goals this season.
Yeah.
He has been the one bright mark of this team.
Only $775. Todd Robinson was $700, which, ironically, the only other person who was $700 wasn't a person at all. It was Blizzard. They auctioned off Blizzard's 00 jersey. So there you go, Todd Robinson haters. He's only worth as much as the mascot. Dylan Clark went for $675. Stefan Della Rovera bargain at $625.
Both of them. That Clark jersey at $675 next year.
Very much so. Vogelhuber was $600. Also, as mentioned previously, Matt Krug had the blood on his jersey. He went for $775, even though he had only played two games at home. And the bargain basement prices, the two lowest, were $525 for Oliver Gabriel, who is nearing return, but has only played one game at home all season, and Anton Blomqvist, who has played a lot more than one home game all season, and that apparently tells you what people think of his level of play.
I think whoever won the Blomqvist jersey should have at least raised it again to $555, because then you could have paid $555
for number 55. Boy.
That's what I would have done.
Always thinking.
Because it's only another $30.
Yeah. The next lowest was $575 for R2-D2 Kenny Baker, or Kevin Baker. And Ross McKinnon. So there you have it, folks. A goalie who never actually played was worth $50 more than Anton Blomqvist.
Wow.
Yeah. I can understand Gabriel because it's been so long since he's played, but Blomqvist played on Saturday.
Yeah.
And yet only fetched $50 less than a goalie that never played.
Is a pretty resounding understanding of the populace's opinion.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah, I want to thank Miss Jennifer Watts for taking notes during the auction for me. I was busy finishing up my stat stuff, so she jotted down all the totals for me. So thanks to her. And the entire list of everyone that was auctioned off, there were 26 total jerseys, is at IcemanManiacs.com. Click over to the Maniac message board. I've got the whole list in the home game promotions thread. So the other thing that was interesting on Saturday was, after the auction, the first ever Guns N' Hoses hockey game.
They're hoping to do a lot more of them.
Yes, and judging by the fan response, I think they will, and they will be very successful. It was really cool, a lot of fun. I was pleasantly surprised at least 2,000 people stuck around to watch it. It was really cool to see that many people stick around. They played three 10-minute periods with a running clock, and the Guns slightly outmatched the Hoses, winning the game 4-0 and outshooting them 23-2.
I've been keeping an eye on this as it developed as they practice over at Swander Ice Arena. That doesn't surprise me at all. A lot of good firemen that are just beginning that love the sport, but they're just beginning.
They're just starting. Yeah, well, the difference in the game was the Guns had two or three guys that looked comfortable out there. The Hoses didn't really
have any.
I do
believe those were the Van Cleve family.
The one that was that really stood out was Pat Fornetten. He was the first star of the game. They actually did do three stars.
Awesome.
He had two unassisted goals and two assists, so he was involved in all four of their goals. For those that don't know, Pat Fornetten is one of the founders of 911 Gives Hope and the Guns N' Hoses movement. And he also is a former Iceman Game Night security guard from back in the day at Swander. He and current Evansville Police Department Police Chief Billy Bullen were the two who were often the security guards working on extra hours for the Iceman games when we were at Swander. But Pat Fornetten was the star of the game, and his son Kyle, who works in the Iceman ticket sales office, was one of the linesmen along with Brian Vall.
I think Brian Vall was wearing my jersey.
Really?
I think so.
The referee for the event was former USI Ice Eagle Patrick Duff.
Who is also the hockey director for Evansville Youth Hockey Association.
Very cool.
One of my many bosses.
Not to be outdone by your wife, though, right?
And Patrick Duff, big-time Fort Wayne Comets fan.
He's from up there, isn't
yes.
he?
Yes. Yeah, he's from Fort Wayne.
That's terrible. He should
that actually
be excommunicated from the city.
That is actually a lie, but I just want to throw it out there because then he'll get grief and I will laugh at him.
But he is from Fort
Wayne.
He
is from Fort Wayne, yeah. But he's not a
he's not a Comets fan.
He's not a Comets fan. I just threw that
out. Well, that's good then.
But he did skate with what's the guy's name that runs around like a crazy man? It's not Chalk, I don't think.
Kaylee Schrock?
Yes. He played with Schrock in Pee-wee's.
Really?
Pee-wee Travel, yep.
Well, how about that?
We've got it all covered here on Iceman Insights, WYIR 96.9, the music bomb.
Yeah. So. One last thing about Guns N' Hoses. It is the kind of the precursor. The hockey game was kind of the precursor to the main event. Their annual boxing event will be on Saturday, April 20th at the Ford Center. If you want more information about that, go to 911giveshope.org. It's a great organization. I was on their website the other day, and I saw something really cool. Is they are an official nonprofit, but unlike a lot of nonprofits, they don't have a single person on the board or anything that actually takes salary. Like, it's completely volunteer. So every dollar that they raise goes to charity, and that's wonderful. So support 911 Gives Hope, and mark your calendars. April 20th at the Ford Center. That's the Guns N' Hoses boxing show, which, if you've never been, is really cool. They do a great job and make it seem like this really big professional-style boxing card. So it's really neat.
You got some information on 2013-2014 Iceman tickets?
Yeah, last week the Iceman office sent out some info about tickets for next season.
Didn't I also see that emails were sent out for buy your playoff tickets now?
Yes, they were, yeah. For those of you who are really optimistic, you can get your playoff tickets now. But for the sake of realism, we'll move on to next season. Prepare yourself for some sticker shock. Single-game tickets, the ends, the goal zones, as they say, will remain $15, and kids' tickets will remain $10. All other seats are going up, some as much as 20%. Glass seats are going up $4 to $45. Club seats, which is the two center sections on the bench side, are going up $2 to $28. Center, which is the two center seats on the asylum side, are going up $2 to $26. Corners are going up $1 to $18, and the upper bowl is going up $2 to $12. So pretty decent increases in a lot of those, but it's not as bad as the full season tickets. Those are going up even more. All seats are going up for full season. The glass club, center, and corners are all going up more than 15%. But even though the single game price for ends is not going up, the season tickets are going up 30%. From $350 to $456. And I think the reason why they went up so much is because they have to differentiate between those and the upper bowl seats, because now for the first time, upper bowl seats will be available for season ticket purchase.
Oh, cool. Which means it'll have to be open every game or you'll get reseated.
No, they will not be open every game. What they're doing is the three sections that are on the press box side, the penalty box side, that are not covered by curtains, those are the only ones that will be available for season tickets.
Got it.
So, sections 214, 215, and 219. And any of the seats in those three sections that are not sold as season tickets will be sold as single-game tickets for any game. So the rest of the upper bowl, the side on the benches, and then the end will not be sold unless they're needed, has been the case.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, they're opening up those three sections that have always been exposed. They just haven't been sold. So yeah, the Upper Bowl season tickets will be $380 for the whole season, which equates to $10 a game. Also, $380 for the full season is the kids' tickets, which is $10 a game, which is the same price as buying them individually. So if you got kids and you aren't sure if they're going to come to all the games, then it might just be worth it to buy on an individual basis because you're not actually saving anything other than reserving a particular seat by doing the season ticket. So that's just scratching the surface. There's more information that they've released. They haven't really said a whole lot about half seasons and nine-game plans and all that stuff yet, but there is some more information on IceManManiacs.com over on the Maniac message board. So if you want more info about your season tickets, you can go there and find that out.
The more money you spend on season tickets, the higher the salary cap will go. I don't know about the cap, actually, but the more we will spend will definitely go up. That is for sure. Here we go now. Bonus. Shocker. Hockey rock song of the week.
Yes, this is a song that will make all of us feel old. Today, February 6th, believe it or not, is Axl Rose's 51st birthday. If that doesn't make you feel old, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I remember listening to these to Sweet Child of Mine my senior year of high school.
On cassette?
Shut it.
Hey, maybe. I grew up with cassettes, too. Or no, with you, it was probably 8-track, wasn't it?
No, it was cassette. Well, there was some 8-tracks in my life, but I was really young for that.
So yeah, Axl Rose's 51st birthday. I think a lot of people probably know that he's from Indiana. He was actually born and raised in Lafayette. His family was very religious. This is kind of an odd thing. He attended church several times a week as a kid and even taught Sunday school for a while. Can you imagine Axl Rose being your Sunday school teacher? That would be a unique experience.
Yes, indeed.
But, of course, then he fell off the wagon, was arrested a bunch, and moved to L.A. to become a rock star. And the rest, as they say, is history. This is a song that I used at Swander for period entrances during the second or third period. So in honor of Hoosier Axl Rose's birthday, this is Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle.
Plays with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
And here we are back on Iceman Insights, WYIR 96.9, the Shocker and the Dirty D. And we are talking about Iceman Trivia.
Iceman Trivia. I went back, first off, and compiled your record.
Yes.
From previous episodes. You are currently 2-6.
I was going to bring up that I was hot on a win streak.
Yeah,
here.
You got last week correct,
yeah.
And that broke a 4-week losing streak. So, yeah, you're about as hot as you've been all season.
I'm about as hot as the Evansville Iceman.
There you go, yeah. But this one you might get. This one's not crazy difficult. There's three or four decent answers, and we'll see if you pick the right one.
All right, I'm warming
up
here.
On your first try. You only get one try.
Yep.
All right. Nathan Moon currently leads the Iceman with 86 penalty minutes this season.
I wouldn't have even guessed that.
I wouldn't either, because there's so many other guys that strike you. But
Cody Beach.
But yeah, he just hasn't been here enough.
Yeah.
Penalty minutes per game, I think he's leading.
And they didn't count all the ones that he served.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he'd be up to about 3,000 by then. But yeah, Nathan Moon leads this season. The question is, who led the Iceman in penalty minutes last season?
Ooh, that is a good question. And I am ready with my answer.
All right.
Do you put the doo-doo-doo Jeopardy music in when you do the podcast, or do I actually have to pause a little bit?
No, I don't put the Jeopardy music in
on
the
trivia. That's why I'm stalling.
I only save the Jeopardy music for when we actually pause the show for research reasons.
So my pause has to be long enough to give people time to think, but short enough that they don't have time to go to Google.
Correct.
My answer is going to be the man that assaulted a referee, Bouillard.
Correct.
Bouillard.
Yes. Very good. Yes, it was Mario Bouillard. He had 193 penalty minutes, which was second in the CHL. Next up was Steve McWay, who had 185, which was fifth in the CHL. Mark Cody was third with 119. Brian Bisek was fourth with 107. And then
a lot of diving calls.
And then Mike Scroy was rounding out the top five with 103. Matt Jens was sixth on the team with 85 in 64 games, which this season he's got 77 in 33 games, which may end up being all he ends up playing, depending on how his hip injury turns out. But so his average per game has gone up from 1.33 to 2.33. So everyone who says that Matt Jens is taking more penalties this season, you're correct.
You are correct.
So, yeah, that's that was the top six.
Asylum with not without facts and the ability to think.
Occasionally. Even a broken clock is right twice a day, though, right?
Well, that's more my thing, but yes.
So yeah, that's the Iceman trivia. And moving on to the Brian Patafi tweet of the week.
I'm doing some research right now.
Seeing how many he's up to?
182 in his quest for 1,000.
182, wow. He might get to 1,000 by the end of next season. As we've mentioned before, you can follow Brian Patafi, the Iceman's athletic trainer and director of injuries or whatever his official title is.
/ team comedian.
Yeah. He is at BPatafi on Twitter. This week's Tweet of the Week is actually kind of a combination of two tweets, both aimed at Cody Beach.
Oh, they were fantastic.
Boy, yeah, he's been really zinging him good. The first one that I want to say is, this was Patafi actually tweeting at Cody. He said, quote, "Before you ever came here, I was reading your stats and I thought you were a goaltender. # no hands, # can't score." Yeah, that's a good one. And then a day or two later, he said, and this is just paraphrasing, but he called Beach, quote, "a fifth-line winger on a four-line team."
Wow.
Yeah.
I missed that. See, the ones that I were reading earlier was when he said, "Here, Cody, I thought I'd be hanging up your equipment for the rest of your season. Career."
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's I assume they're just having good fun. I don't think there's really any bad blood there, but man, some of those are getting a little nasty.
He tells it the way he sees it.
That's just true.
And I'm sure you heard last week on the amusement park where the Augusta general manager
was upset.
And, well, there's some backstory there, and he's not afraid to shoot the bullets in his gun, so to speak. So
very true.
So pretty funny. The Augusta River Hawks. Didn't get to see him while I was over there last week. So.
Well, it sounds like you're not missing a whole lot.
Nope. And, in fact, even the nephews were not very excited to go to the game. I guess they fired the coach because the star player couldn't get along with him. So then they were auditioning coaches, basically, can you get along with our star player?
Wow.
As we continue to struggle in last place.
Did you hear that, Asylum people? There's another place you can go get a job and show off
yep.
what you know.
There you go, Augusta. Upcoming games, got the game tonight that radio only. Well, I guess if you do the TV thing, but it is away, Kalamazoo away. Then a day off to recover before they go to the sunny South, South Carolina and Gwinnett.
Yeah, yeah. Tonight at Kalamazoo, Friday at South Carolina, Saturday at Gwinnett. This is a rare weekend with no home games.
Are we going to see Brian Bisek tonight?
I'm not sure if he's back or not. We'll see.
Yep. I guess I'm hoping so.
We'll have to watch the box score and see one way or the other. Hopefully we will see him at home a couple more times in March. But, yeah, I don't know if he's back from injury yet or not. But, yeah, this weekend we got these three road games. And then next week, we have to talk about next week, too, because we aren't doing a show next week.
That is true.
So next week on Wednesday, the Icemen host Toledo on the 13th. And that night will be the Philly Fanatic making an appearance, which is a really, for those who don't know the Philly Fanatic, it's the mascot of the Philadelphia Phillies baseball team, and he's pretty darn good.
Yep.
He's a lot of fun. So if you ever need a reason to come to a Wednesday Icemen game, there you go. It's the Philly Fanatic, and he's worth the price of admission. So come out to that. And then on Friday the 15th, the Icemen play the evil Fort Wayne Comets.
Matt Spaeth in attendance.
Man Crush!
Indeed.
It is the last time the Comets come to Evansville this season, so the last chance to see them here, and if you need any more reason than that, for some people perhaps this will be a big draw. Also, the first 1,500 fans that come through the doors on Friday the 15th will get an Icicles poster.
Can you believe that Stephen Rickard came here and I put him on the radio and he did not bring one icicle with him?
What's wrong with him?
Part of it, I was kind of shocked because I didn't think he could really do his job or do a radio interview without at least two of them holding his mic for him, carrying his bag, pointing him in the right direction, reading the numbers for the sections for him.
So what you're saying is Stephen is just the voice and the icicles are the brains of that outfit.
I guess so.
Gotcha. Okay. Brains and beauty.
And they're the outfit of the outfit as well. No show next week. I am on vacation, so we apologize about that, but it is what it is. I got to go see Grandma.
Oh.
So, and Ivy and I are going to be sledding and making snow angels and snowmen in the wild reaches of northern lower Michigan.
Whew, where so, at up there?
Roscommon, Michigan. Higgins Lake area. So
again, I say, where at?
Yeah, exactly. Go to Detroit
and go
3 hours north.
Ah,
turn left.
So basically, yes. Canada, very close to it.
In a sense. So,
gotcha.
But it'll be a fun. But one thing we want to share with our lovely listening audience is we have come up with a concept. It was actually a joke that Michael Shockley made, Amusement Park After Dark, referring to the length of our 1 hour show that just continues to go on and on.
Seemingly into the dark.
And it gave me an idea. So many games, everyone gets home and then runs home or leaves the hockey game, maybe grabs a beer or two or an adult beverage, and then heads to the home and to Facebook and the Maniacs Asylum. And we thought, what about if we went on to the radio and you could interact via Facebook or Twitter and talk about the game that we all just got done watching?
Exactly.
So we are contemplating the Amusement Park After Dark, which would be a post-game live radio show. We are working on special guests to join us as well, but it would be Shocker and myself, and do we want to lead into some of our special guests?
Perhaps. Yeah, I think we can tease that.
Stephen Rickard.
Schedule permitting.
Possibly be coming on. So if you want to break down the game, have us break it down with you, read off Facebook posts and interact that way. It's something what we're thinking about. So hit us up. Let us know if that is of interest to you or if 1 hour of us a week is more
enough.
Than enough.
Yeah.
As my wife will definitely say.
Yeah.
I think
it would be fun because it would kind of be like the old days at Swander when the three of us were on the headsets together. But we'd just have to clean up our act a lot for being on the air. There's a lot of things we talked about then that we wouldn't be able to talk about here.
Yep.
But it would basically be a post-game show. We would wait until the official Terry Ficarelli post-game show would end, and then we would go on the air and shoot the breeze for however long we have content, which, yes, depending on how the game went, could be 10 minutes or 2 hours. You never know.
Indeed. How much drama there is in the asylum.
Yeah. But yeah, we're tossing around, and these are not set in stone, but we're thinking possibly Friday, February 15th after the Comets game, and or possibly on Saturday, March 23rd, which is the home finale.
I also have a couple other of guests that may be joining us as well.
Really?
So a little bit more with some hockey experience, actual hockey coaching experience, playing experience that may join us as well. So,
interesting.
Yep.
Do we have enough microphones for all these people?
Yes, we do.
Wow.
Because we are at the Wired venue that plays rock and roll and hip-hop and everything else. So, and we have a four-channel mixing board. So you can kind of get the idea. And part of it, too, I love radio. I always had. Since I was a kid, used to go to bed at night listening to the Tigers or listening to the Red Wings, and I had this little pocket AM radio that I'd put under my pillow so that I could hear it, but my parents couldn't. And I've always just been a big radio guy. The Maple Leafs, among other, a lot of teams have their post-game show. Andy Frost does a great post-game show up in Toronto, and it's, being a Leaf fan, all you can do is complain because there's nothing really to cheer about, which makes for great radio. And then, of course, Hockey Night in Canada, they have their round table in the second intermission. And so that's kind of the idea, is a little bit of a post-game show, then also kind of have a round table segment where we talk about potential trades, free agents for next year, yeah, how we see this league playing out, what we would do, discussions about other teams in the league. So a couple of ideas stolen from a couple of different sources that we're thinking about throwing into the Evansville radio market.
Cool. Yeah, and we want to make it clear, too, we're not that the idea of Amusement Park After Dark and what we do here every Wednesday, this stuff is not meant to be competing with what the Icemen officially do.
This stuff isn't meant to be professional.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, it's completely just fun and light and off the cuff, and it's no
voice
different
of the fan and, yeah, and voices of us as fans.
Right. And it's no different than when you know, teams that aren't on ESPN Radio have shows that are about them on ESPN Radio or some other type of, you know, where not the official outlet for the team is still talking about a team because it's relevant and people want more content. So that's just what we're throwing around the idea. So again, yeah, Amusement Park After Dark, possibly one in February and one in March, and if you like the idea of it, let us know. And if it goes over like a turd in a punch bowl, then maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just pull the plug on this idea, but.
Well,
if people would listen to it, then
we may go for it anyways, because like I said, my wife can only deal with me 1 hour a week as it is, so I don't really have anything to do after
more time out of the house. Yeah, there you go. Gotcha. So yeah, possibly Amusement Park After Dark. We will not have a regular Wednesday show next week, as Derek said, but I will have a story up on IcemanManiacs.com. I've been putting a piece together about player salaries.
I like that.
Which I think it's really interesting. Maybe I'm the only one, maybe we're the only ones. But I think it'll be interesting. So that should be up next Wednesday instead of the Amusement Park and Iceman Insights. Also wanted to tease.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is a good one.
Yes. In 2 weeks when we return with Iceman Insights on February 20th, our next show, we will debut a new recurring feature, the Iceman Insights version of Real Men of Genius. And
they are fantastic.
We had a lot of fun. We sat and we spent about an hour and a half recording all these, and we've got about 10 of them that I've only got one of them edited so far, but we've got about 10 of them that have been recorded. So starting
again,
with the next show.
Not professional.
Yeah.
Possibly the worst radio I have. No, there's no possibly about it. It's the worst radio I have ever done.
Yeah.
But
it's a lot of fun.
We're going to make fun of some people and feel free to make fun of us as well,
yeah,
because we are definitely making fun of us ourselves, yeah, as much as we're
right
making fun
and
of some of our
friends.
And
if you tell
us
they're poorly done, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's not insulting to us. The whole point is that they're really corny and campy and not particularly well done. But we do have the actual music that they use in those spots, and we have something that sounds vaguely like the voices.
Vaguely.
Very vaguely.
Maybe slightly inspired by the,
yeah, there
by
you go,
the voices.
So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, like I said, next week, no show, but there will be a story on IcemanManiacs.com. And then the week after that, on the 20th, Iceman Insights will return and will debut Real Men of Genius, And then also possibly Amusement Park After Dark on Friday the 15th and or Saturday, March 23rd. So lots of exciting things coming up.
You have been listening to Iceman Insights on 96.9 WYIR, The Music Bomb. Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans. He joins us every week, except for when I'm out of town. Also, Ivy, listening in live. Do you have anything to say? What discussion would you like to have? Is there anything you'd like to say to Uncle Jake? Okay, so whispering, not good for radio. Any final thoughts there, Michael Shockley?
I don't even know what she said, and I sat here and read her lips.
She said, peacock tail is driving you crazy.
Peacock tail is driving you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I really don't know what to make of that.
Exactly. That's part of it. That's it's pretty part much, of its brilliance.
That made as much sense as most of the stuff we talk about on this show. We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in, the home team wins, the good old hockey game.